Yeah, that's right. You know, after all these, you know, all these runs that you do, after a while, the, you know, the body starts to slow down. You get a bit weary, and mentally it gets hard. But you know, you've got to be a bit stubborn, and you got to push through the bad times. And you know, because there's a lot more bad times than there are good times when you're going out for a run, and just pushing through it basically. So yeah, you know. As someone once said to me, you know, pain's temporary, memories are forever, so.
Kia ora tato, that was Glenn Sutton. I'm Matt Raymond.
And I'm Eugene Bingham.
This is Dirt Church Radio, interesting conversations with interesting runners. Well, things.
They make my heart sing. What?
Nothing. Still trying to get over your Katy Perry reference from last week, and then you go straight in with that. Anyway, look, Ditch
DCR 2020. Like a plastic bag?
Don't.
All right.
These mic stands are heavy. DCR 2020, if you enter the code at Wild Things, not only do you get 15 months off the VIP, 15 months for the price of 12 on a VIP membership, you get access to over 1,200 runs in the trail directory.
You can go to their shop
yes.
and get super discounts. They give away heaps of races. You can buy things like shorts that you need.
Undies. Matt. Yes.
Matt,
I need
we were
undies.
Having this conversation
yep.
tonight.
That's right.
We've got to go to the Wild Thing store and go shopping. And luckily, because we've used the code DCR2020 and got 15 months for the price of 12, and are VIP members, we can get a discount at the shop.
That's right.
Let's do it.
When you enter the code DCR2020 and get your 15 months for the price of 12, and access to the community, everything like that, we get a little bit of a kickback as well. So win-win if you go to Wild Things.
Win-win-win.
Dot club.
They win.
We win.
We win. And of course you win because you get the thingy. Discount. Yep. There you go. Who else?
Spring Energy.
Yeah.
It just never gets old.
How much of that have you been guzzling?
A lot. Yeah. A lot. I've been panic buying. I'll be like Uber with a 100 miler. Just like there's what's that beeping noise? It's a just when Rebecca says, I think you do this trail running stuff, I think it's just getting a bit ahead, and there's a beeping noise, and then a truck reverses and just
dumps.
Empties. Yep. Speed nut and wolf packs all over the lawn. Fantastic. It's real food. Such things as bananas, basmati rice, nuts, honey, cranberries.
Good flavours.
Delicious, good flavours, palatable and tasty. And if you use the code DCRSPRING, you'll get 10% off any purchase at myspringenergy.co.nz.
Cool.
Scott Running. With the Kinabalu RC Ultra, the best ultra running shoe that I've ever used. You love them.
Yeah, I do.
I love them.
I've done a stack of miles in them now.
Yeah, I've done a stack of miles in mine too.
I love them.
Yeah.
There's just, they've got a bit of cushioning.
Yeah.
They've got a bit of, they hold your foot.
Yeah.
A bit of form.
And
it's good.
And all things being equal, I'll be wearing them at Kepler.
Yeah.
Unless it's underwater like last year, which I'm hoping it won't be.
In which we can go for flippers.
Which we'll go for flippers this time. I'll be wearing those. If you go to scottrunning.nz.
Perfect for Kepler, actually.
Perfect for Kepler.
Mm.
And while you've got your Kinabalu RCs on, you could be wearing your Ultra Spire Zogos 4.
Mm.
Also perfect for Kepler. The pack of the
They've got a
Kepler
model
challenge.
For them in this
they
year's marketing.
Yeah, that's right, they do. Somewhat bewildered sea level dwelling herbivore who's, yeah, got one on, staggering along up to the hut there. They took pity on him, took a photo of him. There it is. But anyway, it's a fantastic pack. Suit all your needs from an all-day adventure to, you know, an hour in the bush. It's just fantastic. If you go to ultraspire.co.nz to check that out, it'd be fantastic.
And go something like further, faster, there in Christchurch. Rocky is hairy and so is Badger. Jules is nice and Jacob is delicious. Go to further, faster now.
Oh, further, faster, there in Christchurch. Rocky is hairy and so is Badger. Jules is nice and Jacob is delicious. Go to further, faster now.
Church Radio.
So, that was pretty inspiring.
Yeah. That's a good way to start,
though. It's a good way to start, and it's the appropriate way to start. We just had a conversation with Glenn Sutton. And for those of you who listened last week, Glenn Sutton was the runner who was out doing an incredible run a week after he'd done an incredible run.
Of course he was.
Of course he was. And,
of course he was.
He tried to link up with us sort of 5K out of Tekapo, and it just wasn't shaken out. So we'd binned it, but, man, we've just had a
conversation.
It was worth the wait. So with typical Southern understatement, this man is a rip-roarer. So
yep.
Fantastic. Yep. Can't wait to bring you that conversation.
Episode 117.
We made it.
We sure did.
Another big weekend in Aotearoa.
Man, there was lots of races.
A bit going on.
Yep. Lots of people out doing missions.
Yep.
Did you see the mission that Claire and Lucy
Let me tell you about it. Yeah, that mission intersected with a mission that I had.
Oh, you saw Jonathan? And,
yeah, absolutely. It was amazing.
They went to every gate, didn't they?
Yeah, so
at Riverhead.
So what happened is I went out on Saturday for a run, which was supposed to be a certain amount of length, and I had a real sore stomach and was feeling generally miserable as soon as I started. And then I saw Jonathan Ash, who I'd ran into during lockdown, who'd been running. He ran from Devonport right the way into town. Like, he did a big mission. He was running through Riverhead as I was heading out. And Claire Fox, Lucy Mills, Sue Hardy, and they were doing all the gates.
Yes.
Which is about 66K in Riverhead.
What a great, like, I was talking to Gareth Morris about this on Sunday. It's like, what an absolutely pointless thing to do.
So,
what a brilliant
thing
to
seen? Do. So for those, if you were to spend an hour of your life that you don't want back, go to the topo map of Riverhead Forest and then intersect all the gates. It's an arbitrary run. Arbitrary.
Absolutely. So yeah, there were plenty of people out doing cool stuff, including good self, some good training. But yeah, Glenn Sutton, looking forward to bringing you that chat. So how have you been, man?
Yeah, I'm good. It's my day off. I'm tired. I'm hungry. But no, things are going well. Saturday had some challenges, stomach challenges, and Sunday didn't. And it was a good day. It was a good weekend. So I still got out and got what I needed to get done, and feel all the better for it. You had a bit of an adventure, didn't you?
I had an adventure. I did an ultra half marathon.
An ultra half marathon. You can market that. So tell me, you went out and did the Auckland Half Marathon.
Yeah, so it was the Auckland Marathon, Auckland Half Marathon on at the weekend, on Sunday, and up over the Harbour Bridge. So I was entered in the half, and because I'm a really experienced runner, I do things like don't bother checking bus timetables and things.
You are quite, you are a very experienced runner.
Yeah. So you'd think I'd know better. But basically, just assume that we'd just be able to roll up to get the bus.
Right.
Because that's what I've done every other year.
Uh-huh.
Haven't bothered. But, of course, every other year I've been running the marathon. And
right.
The buses just run, you know.
Yeah.
So rocked up to catch the bus to the half marathon start line an hour and a quarter before the start, thinking, sweet, this will be heaps of time.
Yeah.
No more buses. They've stopped running the buses. What? That's insane.
So where did you turn up to get the bus?
To Albany, right. To get the park and ride, the park and ride to get the bus down to Devonport.
Yeah.
So jumped in the car, went on the motorway, my friend Peter and I.
Yeah.
And then we start having this fight because there are signs up on the motorway saying, Takapuna traffic, get off at somewhere.
Right.
I remember. And I was like, no, we need to go past that to get to somewhere else off-ramp. I'm not very good on North Shore off-ramp, sorry. But he was insistent. And so we got off the motorway, Tristramav, got to Takapuna, and it was like roadblock city. You could not get past Takapuna to get down to Devonport without driving all the way back to get to the motorway.
Yep.
So the clock is ticking. So we just pulled over, parked, jumped out, started running down to Devonport.
How far away from Devonport were you?
About 5K or something.
Right.
So we're running down towards Devonport. The marathon starts, so people are running back the other way. So I got to see heaps of mates.
Yeah.
Everyone going, what the hell are you doing? It's like, hi. So saw lots of people. Hi, everyone. We didn't quite make it to Devonport in time for the start.
How late did you miss the start by?
Oh, we were just coming around the corner. We heard the gun go. but then, of course, just like everyone's coming towards us.
So you were doing a salmon run for the like couple of hundred metres.
Yeah, so we were up on the footpath, and then so of course people start jumping on the footpath, and we're sort of trying to go the other way because we wanted to cross the finish start line.
And you've got your race numbers on.
Yeah, we've got our race numbers on. Everyone's going, you're going the wrong way. Oh. So we got past the start line, as it were.
Yeah.
But then, of course, by then, like, the big crowd was coming.
Yeah.
Like, the walkers and everyone.
Right, yeah. You know?
So we had to kind of jump and squeeze in there and then sort of make our way.
How many K did you have to go? Excuse me.
Oh, 21. We started way at the back of the field. I'm really sorry, everyone, that we kind of cut off in that. We tried to be courteous, but, you know. But because I'd always planned on doing the, excuse me, this is TMI, the toilet stop before the start.
Oh, no.
So, of course, I hadn't had that opportunity.
Oh, no.
So I ducked into a loo as well.
Oh, no.
So that time went by. And
what K was that?
No, that was just after the start line.
Right.
Yeah.
So you were about 6K into your 21K run.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
1K into the run.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Not
the
even
the donkey's
that.
Kicking down the door. You've got yep. to jump into
got
the...
Got to jump into yep. the thing. Right, so get that done.
Right.
Start again. Go past all these people again.
You throwing elbows by this point?
Oh, no. We were trying to be very respectful. But then we were on the way and we realised that Peter didn't have his hop card
right.
for us to get the bus back to Takapuna.
Did you have your hop card?
I had my hop card
so
because
why don't
I'm a boy
you just
Scott,
tag him
so
on?
Because you can't do two, can you?
Yes, you can.
What?
You just say, driver, can I tag this person on? And they go, okay. And you go, beep, 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 beep.
Really?
Yep.
I didn't know that.
Here you go.
Well, anyway, he had to pay for his own trip.
No free rides on the Bingham bus.
No free rides on the Bingham bus. So we left the course,
right.
ran to the car,
uh-huh.
got the hop card,
yeah.
and then we were like, should we duck? No, we better go back to the official course. So then we ran all the way back to where we'd left the course,
right.
of course.
Because you didn't want to get accused of...
Yeah, cutting it short.
Yeah.
And then we ran, carried on the run. So... A half marathon ended up being about 28 k's.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was good fun though.
I think that's probably the best half marathon story I've ever heard.
Yeah, well, I haven't run many half marathons to be fair,
yep.
but that's my most fun one.
That. And you could have just, I mean, you've known Peter a long time, eh? You've
yeah.
been overseas with the man, you travelled together, you've known him
no,
for...
No, I haven't, no.
No, you're no. not Peter? There's no. someone else.
Yeah, I've never travelled overseas with them. Certainly never travelled on a bus with them.
Right, obviously.
Obviously, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
But there you go. So that was fun. So, yeah, everyone who spotted me running the wrong way, and there were lots of you who yelled at me, that's why I was running the long way, wrong way.
Oh,
there
geez.
You go. There you go.
That's
So that was my weekend.
That's it. Oh, God. Look, moving from the ridiculous to the sublime, we need to shout out to our Patreon patrons who are just so helpful to us. And if you'd like to support what we do, if you'd like to send Eugene to races that he could bung up the time, but you'd get good content out of it, we'd love you to come on board. And if you set up a regular donation, even for the cost of a cup of coffee a month, help us do things that are a bit outside our reach at the moment, like reading bus timetables, buying audio equipment or to improve our sound. And, you know, we love what we do and we want to do it for as long as possible. So if you could help to keep the lights on, we'd love that. If that's not in your wheelhouse at the moment, that's just as cool. So thank you.
Thanks, Patreon patrons.
Patreon.com/DirtChurchRadio.
Right. There is a little bit of a backstory to that whole half-marathon escapade. The reason I ended up in the half, because I had actually entered the marathon. And I guess I just wanted to emphasize the power to say no, not today.
Yeah.
You know, because I'd entered the marathon and despite the conversation that we're about to have.
Yeah, I was
Sutton,
just thinking that. Sorry.
Sorry. Yeah.
Sorry.
Anyway, I've been nursing this injury, not a broken pelvis, but anyway, I've been nursing this injury and stuff and I haven't really done the training that I felt that I needed to do the marathon properly. So I opted for the half, which kind of was a bit of an odd feeling for me. I kind of felt pressure to do the marathon. You know, there were lots of our mates who were doing the marathon and I was like, you know, a bit of FOMO and also that kind of, wanting to, feeling a bit of pressure, I guess. But but in the end, I decided, nah, actually, I could do it. But is that going to be the best thing for me?
And I guess what it speaks to is the power of, like, you'll hear in this conversation that we're going to have with Mr. Sutton, that he's going out and he's doing some pretty incredible stuff.
Yeah.
However, that's his choice to do that.
Yes.
And whilst I support the choice of anyone to do something that they feel that is in their means to do, if it's causing you mental anguish and it's going to be ultimately unhelpful,
yeah. Well,
what's the point?
It's also like my, you know, I sort of thought in the context of Kepler, do I, you know, do I want to do this and then get injured and not end up being able to do the race that I want to have at Kepler?
Yep.
No, I'd rather, you know, do that. So I guess I'm just here to say it's okay to say no. It's okay to say, nah, I'm not going to do that actually.
Especially if you're working towards a bigger picture.
Yeah. Right.
Results.
Bang load of results today.
Yeah. Lots of people's favourite race and a long-standing one in the calendar, the Kawerau King and Queen of the Mountain.
Mm.
And Halloween, year of COVID, 125 brave souls lined up at the start of the 65th year of the Kawerau King of the Mountain.
It's amazing, eh?
Yeah, it's been going a long time. And it was nasty, apparently. Mm. So they're saying despite torrid conditions, global economic collapse, decimated events industry, and a future laden with uncertainty, Kawerau King of the Mountain still went ahead.
Mm.
Amazing.
Yeah, so the winner this year, David Hauenschmidt, again.
Again.
Wow. 51 minutes and 14 seconds. Chris Morrissey, second in 54 minutes and 7 seconds. So that's quite a decent victory there.
Yeah,
and Sam Clark, third in 54.33.
That's amazing. In the women's event, Kate Moore, 103.42. Phoebe Barrett, 109.55. And Mila Dibben, 110.44.
And so David is a
Rotorua
doctor.
Yep.
And Kate is a farmer.
There you go.
Mission Mount Somers. So that's down in Canterbury there on the edge of the plains. Some beautiful trails by the sounds of it. Yeah. So that race was on at the weekend too in the Alpine Marathon. Struan Webb, 4:43.39. Alistair McDowell, 4:51.31, and Steve O'Neill, 4:57.46.
That's amazing. Mm. Julia Grant bringing it home in 5:32.22. Laura Patty, 5:34.45, and Emily Harrison, 6:01.29.
And in the half marathon, I'm going to switch around. In the half marathon, Sabrina Grogan, 2:36. That's true. 31. Scott Runner.
Yep.
Claire LeGrice, 2:53.14, and Catherine Wilson, 2:44.55.
Ben Williams taking it home in the men in 2:03.46, Flavio Viana in 2:11.19, and Stephen Blackwell, 2:13.59.
And there was a 10K race as well, where Francesca McAdam won in 57.03.
And Bede Gierda,
52.17. Yep. Yep. There was even a 5K.
Aww.
Charlie Ross, 28:09, won the males, and the females was Dale Collis, 28:49.
Nice one.
Yeah.
It was the last Xterra, Total Sport Xterra for the year.
Yeah.
Out in the Hanua Ranges. And
yeah,
that one
apparently because it obviously wasn't ideal having it the same weekend as Auckland Marathon, but it was just the timing.
What are you going to do?
Timing. Yeah. Had to be, so there you go.
Super long, 23 point something K, 873 metres of elevation, which is not inconsiderable.
It's not to be laughed at.
It's not to be laughed at. And first was Ari McConey in 2:04.19. That's amazing. Yep. Blair Griffith, 2:19.32. That's quite a victory. Oof. And Jonty Oram, third in 2:20.37.
Chloe Vincent, won in 2:52.42. Mal Lloyd, 2:55.34. And Sharon Campbell, 3:08.30.
Amazing effort in the long, with again 765 meters of again nothing to mess with. First place was Mark Herman in 1:48.21. Donald McGoldrick was second in 1:56.38, and Max Oliveiro was third in 1:59.07.
And Rosie Taylor won the women's long in 2:21.44.
Sierra represent.
Yes. Jenny Stewart, 2:22.32, and Lauren Taylor, 2:31.21.
Nice.
Mm.
So the medium course, 12.6. So that's the great thing about Total Sport, eh? There's a distance for everyone.
Yeah.
Benjamin Rickaby was first in 55.23, and Amelia Lythe taking it home in 1:03.41.
And in the short course, Samuel Rickaby, 27.31, and Stella Hammond, 28.11.
Amazing.
Mm.
On to Wellington.
Mm.
Yeah, another Xterra. Makiro's Revenge, 18-kilometre run. There was Nick Cox first in 1:30.04, Paul Campbell, 1:31.37, and Chris Lyons, 1:32.04.
Rosie Walsh, 1:53.33, Michelle Law, 2:01.40, and Bridget Johnson, 2:02.19.
In the 12K, Stephen Woodwork was 1:22.24, Stephen Greenside was 1:22.44, and Adam Adrian Jerk was 124.51.
Carolyn Melsop, 135.40. Maya Holbert, 141.21. And Cassie Sutherland, 141.42. Ooh, close finish.
Yeah. And the 7.5, Dan Hunt, 25.10. Gareth Kitchingman, 30.54. And Brian Nevin, 31.42. And you had Emma Crew, 30.53. Fiona Havice, proving that she can smash it out short, she can long, 32.18. And Steph Vestig, 32.25.
Yeah. So in the Auckland Marathon, Dan Jones, he who will shortly be going for his third Kepler victory, maybe he'll do it in Vaporflies again this year, he won the Auckland Marathon in 2:21.68 and he absolutely smashed it.
Yeah.
Fabe Downs was 5 minutes back in 2:26.34 and Hirotaka Tanimoto was third. He out-sprinted William Harris by 6 seconds for 2:28.07. So Dan's been in Kenya. He was in Kenya for 5 months. He got stuck there.
Oh,
he
apparently,
I think he had something like three attempts to try and get home. But with cancelled flights and stuff, couldn't make it. So, but, you know, what you going to do? You're stuck in E10 training. So he was pretty pleased with the way it went. And Alice Mason, another doctor.
Yep.
It's a theme here this week.
It's a theme.
Get into medicine, people.
And if you're not too tired health sciences, that, just do running.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she added to her list of marathons throughout New Zealand that she's won. She's won once in Wellington, twice in Christchurch, three times in Rotorua, and now at Auckland. She's a three-time New Zealand champion. So she won in 2:43.33. Hannah Oldroyd, second in 2:49.27, and Margie Campbell was third in 2:52.39.
What was Mel Aitken doing?
She was storming home, is
in
what she was doing.
Place.
Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. Amazing.
So poor old Margie Campbell was cramping up with a kilometre to go and could hear
the siren in the background.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Superintendent Aitken had the sirens going, chasing her down.
Wow.
But she managed to hold on. So, yeah. What a great, great run there. Hannah Oldroyd, she'd apparently had not very much sleep the night before because where she was staying, they had a Halloween party going.
Oh, none more annoying.
Mm, mm.
So looping back, I mean, we're all really excited about Kepler. We're going to be
only about 6 weeks away now, aren't
we? I think it might be less than 6 weeks. Mm. 5 weeks away.
Wow.
According to my Training Peaks. But we're going to be there. We're going to be doing a live podcast with a great panel, yet to finalise, but we're working hard for the people. And amazing that Kepler have had notification from DOC. They've been allowed to run the race this year with 50 extra competitors, which is fantastic news for Te Anau and the district, because that's 50 extra people plus their supporters coming to Te Anau, spending money, hanging out.
It's a town that needs some help. So,
absolutely.
You know, like all those towns that have been relying on tourism for so many years and have had such tough times. But, that's fantastic. So, so good. So, so good. Right.
Greatest run ever. Which is the part of the show where we ask you to write into us and tell us your greatest run ever. It doesn't have to be a race or a mountain summit. It might just be that time that you ran for 4K at the start of a marathon with everyone going, hey, mate, it's that way. You're running the wrong way. It might just be a run around the block, something that's sung to you for some reason. Send it in to us at dirtchurchradio@gmail.com. And this comes... Have you been trawling running doctors? Google running doctors?
I just realised this is unbelievable.
From Dr. Laura Pfeiffer. Kia ora team. This is not so much a single greatest run ever, but rather a greatest event forever. Let me explain. The run is the 100-kilometre Taupo Ultramarathon in 2020. Now, a bit of background. For the past 4 to 5 years, a group of medical school friends and I have attended Taupo Weekend, starting out as first-year house officers. We are now far-flung across the country in a variety of training schemes and working 50 to 70 hours a week. However, we have made a pact to take leave from work for this weekend each year to catch up, to challenge ourselves, to tune out and just run in the bush. Over the years, we've had personal battles getting to the start and finish lines at this event. My first ever ultra was the Taupo 50 kilometres in 2017, after much arm twisting by my best friend Bex. I finished the week of night shifts Friday morning, flew from Christchurch to Taupo, slept about an hour thanks to nerves and stuffed circadian rhythms, and managed to lose every single one of my toenails during the race. Oof. But after 2 weeks and not being allowed into the surgical theatres because I couldn't tolerate wearing covered shoes, you can't go into the theatres with bare feet,
Can you wear jandals into surgery?
Oh, even those, no, they don't like it. I was hooked up I was hooked on Ultra Life. I even fluked a win in the 74 kilometre in 2019, so it seemed a natural progression to take on the 100K for 2020. Per tradition, we all arrived at Taupō at various times, but each greeted at the airport with a welcoming crew. We were hosted by the amazing Leanne and Daves. We eat all the treats, visit Taupō sites, and talk a lot of BS. We have the most incredible support crew made up of parents, siblings, grandparents, and partners whose enthusiasm certainly stands out. Each year, a new costume to ensure visibility at the aid stations. This year, seven entered the 24-kilometre event. One runner had been in labour exactly 1 year before and had a 12-month-old daughter at the finish line. Three entered the 50K and I entered the 100. Good old Dad in his late 60s drove me out to the start line of the 100K. The vibe in the chutes was indescribable. Being the first ultra marathon to take place at nationwide level one, everyone was commented how lucky we are to get to run this together. The conditions on the day were perfect. The course, wicked. The race went pretty well, and I was lifted each time by seeing Dad, cheering strangers, or support crew at aid stations. The 24 kilometres had time to see me coming through the 50K mark, and this was the motivation I needed to know I could make the finish. I was thrown on my backside, shoes and socks changed like a F1 car in a pit stop, and off I went again for the final 50K. I caught Ben, who was doing the 50K, on the loop before the 76K mark, where I had to hit my first and only low area of the race. He propelled me for the last push out of Kinloch. I finished my first 100 kilometres in a time better than I ever anticipated of 10 hours, 24 minutes, and second female across the line. To be honest, I'd really glanced at my watch, had zero expectations. I was just so happy to have the opportunity to be out in the bush alongside 999 other runners. To summarise, while I'm delighted about my personal achievement, the great part of this run is that people that are woven into the journey. Huge thanks to Team Total Sport, the Stewart family, who are the most outrageous hosts, the fabulous sport crew, and the lifelong friends who make this epic event. Here's to 2021. Laura.
So good. So good.
That's amazing, Laura. Yeah. Well done.
Yeah. I mean, to go from that first 50K to coming second in the
100K. Especially after a week of night shifts.
Oh, my goodness.
That's actually the easiest I've ever read anything written by a doctor, too. So hats off to you, Laura.
I love these little burns. Just
little nursing burns.
Little nursing burns. Yeah. Now, the rest of you, we really need some greatest runs ever, so send them in.
Yeah, absolutely.
We love them, and people love them, and people go and read them on the website. We can see that. Yeah. So, yeah.
Right. On to our show. It's been a week waiting, and we're so glad that this came together. Glenn Sutton, finished second at Biggs, 34 yards or laps. The first New Zealander to complete three Badwater 135-mile races. It runs through Death Valley, so the lowest to the highest place in the United States. He's won Northburn twice. He's based in Dunedin. He's a family man. He works full-time. Ex-rugby player and tells a good yarn. Let's get into it with Glenn Sutton.
Ditchits Radio.
All right, I'm speaking to Glenn Sutton, all the way from Dunedin. Kia ora, Glenn. How are you?
Yeah, good, thanks, mate.
That's good to hear. Hey, I'm sorry about, for our listeners out there, last week you were indeed the runner who was on an incredible sort of big adventure, and we tried to get in contact with you when you were in the field, but it didn't quite pan out. What were you up to?
I had a couple of mates running from Christchurch to Queenstown, based over 6 days. So it's 500 kilometres, and they were doing it for mental health. So I wanted to be a part of that. So I did a leg with them. So that was from Geraldine to Tekapo, distance of 91Ks, I think we clocked out that day. So,
wow.
Yeah,
and cool. I must confess, my South Island geography is not that flash. Whereabouts in the run is Geraldine to Tekapo?
So it's basically in the middle of the South Island. So Geraldine's probably an hour from Timaru, inland, and running through to Tekapo, which is sort of in the Mackenzie Basin.
Wow,
stunning part of the country. Absolutely,
yeah,
stunning.
Beautiful part.
Yeah. So how long did that? How long mission was that?
I think we started about 5:30 in the morning, and we got into Te Kapo about 8:30. So it was a bit of a long slog. A bit of walking, or quite a bit of walking in there, which I wasn't used to, but I was just happy to tag along and be part of these guys doing their big mission of 500Ks. So, pretty cool.
That's amazing. Were they raising money for the Mental Health Foundation or just drawing attention to the course?
Both those things. So they actually went all the way. They finished on the Thursday. Both a bit worse for wear because they're not road runners at all, and they found it quite difficult with the long straights and being on the tarmac. But they had a great support crew and people around them that sort of got them through. So both very special people, both Ben and Kieran.
Oh, that's amazing! And I wasn't aware that it was all on road. I mean, that's something that you'd be quite well used to, though, hey, having run Badwater 3 times.
I don't mind the tarmac. I've got used to it over the years. it can be quite challenging. Yeah, there's not much given the road. But, I don't mind it. It's fine.
You would have probably said that this tarmac's a bit cool for me. So the temperature-wise, it must have been quite pleasant.
Well, on the Monday when we ran, it actually rained pretty much the whole way, so it was quite cold. So I'd definitely prefer the heat, but it is what it is.
And I guess when we spoke into you, you were saying that had been your first run all week, because you had the week before you'd snagged the assist at the Bigs at the New Zealand Bigs backyard.
Yeah, so that was the week before. Yeah. This crazy event, and when I first heard of it, I thought, nah, I'm not going to do this. This is stupid. But having a wee think about it, I put my name forward and was lucky enough to be asked to come up and have a run. So it's quite a crazy format.
It sure is.
Bigs backyard.
Yeah. Yeah, it sure is. I mean, it's different to anything else, really, isn't it?
Yeah, like it is not a race at all, and I didn't treat it as a race. Just 6.7 kilometres per loop, and you get now to do that loop, and you just turn up at that start line at the top of the hour and you just keep going until you can't. It's quite a sick format.
It sure is. But what does Adam Keane call it?
Satan's beep test,
that's right.
He stole it off me.
Oh, really? Give it to him. Okay. So
that's pretty much what it was.
yeah. And so you went deep. You went to, 34 hours there. And it was just you and Adam for quite a few laps. Were you expecting that?
I wasn't too sure what to expect. So traditionally for a run, I tend to go out quite hard and just hang on for as long as I can sort of thing. But this event was always going to be quite different. So there's obviously a few people there that had done it before, so I was the apprentice basically. So I was those first few laps, I was just coming in last, and I was happy just to tone it right back, see how it all played out, and just kept 50 minutes a lap, 52 minutes a lap consistently for about 28 hours, and. Wow. It worked in my favour, I think, being the tortoise, and perhaps the guys that went out a bit hard, they were completing laps, anywhere between 40 and 50 minutes, possibly could have been a bit quick, and they sort of just dropped out, and in the end there was four of us, and then there was two.
It's an incredible effort. I mean, how was it? I mean, like, I was lucky enough to be there at the start. How was it starting at the time? Like, everyone in the world started at the same time, obviously, and I guess you could look at it maybe the Northern Hemisphere athletes were getting a bonus and that they started in the day, they could have got a good night's sleep, and you guys were probably, you know, it's getting up at 1 a.m. or starting at 1 a.m. But how was that starting on the night loop?
That seemed fine for me. I didn't mind it. Like we had a bit of a cruisy day on Sunday, I think it was, before the race start. So on the Saturday, sorry, before the race start at 1 a.m. on Sunday morning. So we actually probably got about 3 or 4 hours sleep, which was possibly enough. So 1 o'clock in the morning was fine to get rolling. So that was a night loop. So that was basically a run out and a run back. So you know, it was cool. I think everyone was happy with the race start time. So yeah, it's good.
And then I guess switching into the, so you did, you would have done what, 6 laps of the night loop, and then switched onto the day loop, eh?
Yeah. Mm. So the day loop was obviously the same distance, but had quite a bit more elevation, and it was a bit more technical. And the day loop was a bit warmer also. So I guess the day loop was taking about 5 minutes longer. So it was requiring a bit more effort needed to complete it. That was fine.
had you familiarized yourself with the laps beforehand?
No. So we turned up a couple of hours before before it got dark, basically. So we had no idea I had no idea where we were running. So that's why I just kept to the back. And you know, those first few laps, first 10 laps, I was last in pretty much, I think. So I was happy with that, you know, because I was doing 15-minute loops. So, you know, there is no rush because it is a race or an event with no end. So, you know, don't know when the end is going to come. So, you just had to be patient.
And I guess there's that balance, isn't there, between you look over time, you know, some athletes, they talk about that sort of that they want to cut down on that cumulative time on feet, say, you know, 42 minutes versus 50 minutes. But then I guess there's the other part of that, isn't there, that you're highlighting that, sure, maybe you'll get an extra 8 minutes or say, you know, if you're doing like or 5 minutes, if you're doing a 45-minute lap, but then you're running that much faster that time and, you know, the fatigue's going to catch up sooner or later versus the efficiency.
Yeah, exactly. So my goal was, you know, I can stay awake for, you know, 48 hours sort of thing. So I didn't think it was necessary to do quick laps and then try and have a power nap. So I was real happy with doing, you know, 50, 52-minute laps, sitting in the chair, having something to drink, having something to eat, and then going again. I didn't think sleep wasn't that important because I believe the race wasn't going to go on for that long, if you know what I mean.
Mm. So you didn't sleep at all through the race?
No. My total number of yards was 34. So even at the 34-yard lap, you know, I wasn't really tired. I was just more fatigued than anything. Right. You know, I wasn't yawning or anything. So sleep wasn't the problem. It was just the stamina to keep going. Yeah, because as the laps kept mounting, my time was slowly blowing out.
I think when we spoke to you last week, you were saying, we started off talking to you last week, you were saying that you thought that Adam might be about to drop, and so you were trying to keep going. You're really trying to hang in there.
Yeah, it was a bit of an unknown. So this year's format with Big's Backyard was to act like a team, because you were trying to outlast other countries. But as the New Zealand team slowly dropped off, we sort of lost that team motivation to keep one another going, sort of thing. And when it came down to me and Adam, it was just a matter of sort of surviving on your own to get round rather than talking to one another saying, come on, mate, hang on to me, you know, I'll push you around for another lap sort of thing. But, you know, and that stage of the event, everyone's tired and you're not really thinking properly, so you're just literally thinking for yourself to get round and hope the other guy doesn't. Where we should have been perhaps thinking, you know, working a bit more as a team sort of thing, but that's something to work on next year.
Because that certainly seems to have been the Belgians' approach, wasn't it? Just to hang in tough as a team until there was no one else left and then go for it.
Yeah. So I guess that will sort of come with practice, you know. We've all been there now. So a lot of us have done it for 2 years and you know, us newbies have done it for a year. So if the format arrives again, we'll sort of be a bit more wiser and a bit more on ball with it.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
to push one another.
April next year, it's all on again. But I mean, you and Andy Smith, you know, you parked up by the outside the corral there. You're sharing a table. You had your chair set up. I mean, you didn't give the impression that this was your first sort of major rodeo. You looked pretty in control of you know, managing your exertion, sitting down, looking relaxed. I guess you've had a lot of practice with that with runs like Badwater, hey?
Yeah. I was pretty relaxed, and you know, in some ways, it was really well. In all ways, it was really good. I had a crew member there, so Michael flew up with me, and he crewed me for the race. So my job was real simple. I just had to do a yard in under an hour, and when I come back in, he had my food there and my drink, and you know, offered words of support and all that sort of stuff. He even had a hot water bottle for me each lap,
which I used.
Yeah, I just had an injury, pelvis injury, that I've been hanging on to for a few years now. So I find that using a bit of heat on it helps. So, he was fantastic. And you definitely need a crew for that type of event. That's just so, so helpful for the runner.
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised, God love him, Ian Evans, sort of, you know, when he was doing laps, he didn't have a crew because his partner couldn't get up off work. So, like, my wife ended up sort of crewing him for him for a couple of laps, you know, and I was... I mean, it speaks to the talent of the athletes that they were able to undertake that without a crew. But, you'd think someone like Michael, who's a good man, would be mandatory.
Yeah, like it helps. You know, those guys up the front were really – they were sort of racing every lap, and it's not that type of event to race a lap because you don't know how many laps you're going to do, so you're better to pace yourself. And if you've got someone there looking after you and keeping an eye on things, it just makes your job so much more easier and you just relax. You just come in and you sit down in your chair and, you know, what do you want to eat? You know, Michael was offering me a plate and it just had bits and pieces on it and I just chose what I wanted and, you know, I didn't have to refill drink bottles or anything like that. So, yeah, I basically had the easy job. I just had to run or walk.
That's fun. I mean, in terms of, and I want to sort of talk about Badwater. I mean, I guess in terms of preparation and crewing, that's a whole nother, seems like a whole nother level of complexity. But what where did you first hear about the Badwater 135?
Heard it through basically Northburn, 100 miler, which is held down in Cromwell each year, and Lisa Tarmody was the sort of the profile pick for that and one of the organisers. And I got chatting to her during the event 1 year and she suggested, you know, why don't you, you know, put your name forward for Badwater. And it just got me thinking. So you had to qualify for a start. So I did that and then I put my name forward and it's a selection process. So I was lucky enough that they selected me the first year I put my name forward. So that was the start of things. So, So fortunate enough to have done it now three times and, and being a three times finisher also. So it's, yeah, it's pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. And for those who don't know, I mean, it is a race, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's from the lowest point in the continental United States to the highest, isn't it?
Yeah. So you start Death Valley. Start in Death Valley National Park, which is 85 metres below sea level, and then you finish at the top of Mount Whitney. To be honest, I can't remember the height now, but it's a bloody big hill that you finish on, and you're right up there in the mountains. So, she's a 135-mile race, so it's 217K.
Wow.
I think the temperatures have been, well, last year when I went, it got up to like 51, 52 degrees. So it's a race that they have at the hottest time of year, so which is in July. And it's they select 100 runners each year to do it. So to get in is quite difficult, and an achievement if you do actually make the start line. So,
wow. What's kept you going back? I mean, to go back three times and complete it is phenomenal.
Probably sounds a bit cheesy, but I had the easy bit. Well, I just had to run. So come the race day on the start line, I think I knew myself I'd knock it out. It's the preparation before the run. You know, it's the 6 months once you find out that you've been selected and you can enter. It's 6 months to the race day, basically. So it's all that preparation to get there, or the training, the logistics, because you've got to have a crew. So you've got to find at least two people to go with you. That in itself is all quite hard, and just to bring it all together and pull it off, it's just not me, it's other people as well, you know, dedicating their time and money and stuff. So it's pretty cool.
I mean, what is your does your team consist of, your crew? I mean, how many people do you have with you?
Yeah, so each year there's been four people, so you can't have any more than four people. So you basically need a driver and then three other people. So those three other people can run with you after the 42-mile mark. They can be your pacer, but the pacer must stay behind the runner. And typically the pacer will carry the food and your water or ice. And whenever you want anything, you just put your hand behind you, sort of thing, and they pass you whatever. So, and then your car just leapfrogs you. So the boys were leapfrogging me probably every 2 miles, maybe. They'd stop and we'd get some fresh water or food, and then just go again and again.
Wow. Didn't you have Rod Dixon pop down and see you last year?
Yeah, so that was a bit unexpected to see him. He's a bit of a character.
Did he bring his medal with him?
No, but typically he does.
Yeah, yeah. I know. He told us. Yeah. Fantastic.
But, he was a real good bugger. So a couple of days before the race, we went up to where the race finishes, and he met us that day, and he was telling us plenty of stories and stuff. He had a connection with the race director, so that's why he was sort of in the mix a wee bit. And I guess being a Kiwi and him being a Kiwi, he made an effort to come down and make himself known. So it was really cool.
That's fantastic. Brilliant. I mean, he's a legend, and It's such a legendary race. I mean, I remember watching years ago on 60 Minutes, you know, when they profiled, I think, Dean Karnazes and Pam Reid that year Pam Reid won it overall, and everyone was running in the white suits. And I remember they were eating hamburgers as they were running. And I was just like, what is the sport? You know, what are these people doing to themselves? It's that iconic, I guess, hey?
Yeah, it is. And you know, there's been a lot of big names do that race over the years. You know, guys that have and girls that have written books They've got all sorts of stories, you know. David Goggins, ex-Navy SEAL, you know, real hardcore, down-to-earth people, really, you know. It's just some real characters out there too, you know. It's they have their favourites that come back each year because it's a selection process. But you're just a real mixture of ages and abilities and males, females. Yeah, it's just a really cool event.
And what's the cutoff?
48 hours.
Wow.
To get the belt buckle. So, yeah. So typically they are typically about 97 starters. So there's three waves. You start 2 hours apart. So 97 starters tend to come each year, and probably about 80% finish.
Wow.
I believe a couple of years ago, only 2/3 of the field finished. It was just a real hot year, I think, by the sounds of things. So I was lucky enough last year to have a cool year.
only 51 degrees.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You had prepared a heat box to get ready.
Yeah, so
and you built it yourself. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so really tricky to train in Dunedin, where I live, in the middle of winter to go to the hottest place on earth and go for a run. So I needed to come up with a bit of a plan to see if I could perhaps come up with something warm. So I made a heat box. Basically, I'm a joiner by trade, so that was easy. I made a box and put a treadmill in it with three heaters, and it was really efficient. It used to get up to like 42 degrees in there. It was a wet heat. You'd come out dripping wet. You know, when you're in America and in Death Valley, it's a dry heat, so you sweat, but it just gets evaporated instantly. So, but I found with building the heat box, it was it was a matter of being in discomfort and just keep carrying on, if you know what I mean.
Right. Yeah.
It was tough, but it was good preparation, good training to go overseas. So it's
sort of as much about the mental side of it rather than just the physical adaptation.
Yeah, that's right. You know, after all these, you know, all these runs that you do, after a while, the body starts to slow down. You get a bit weary, and mentally it gets hard. But you know, you've got to be a bit stubborn, and you got to push through the bad times. And you know, because there's a lot more bad times than there are good times when you're going out for a run, and just pushing through it, basically. So as someone once said to me, you know, pain's temporary, memories are forever. So yeah, it's a short race. It's only, it's less than 48 hours. So just suck it up. You paid the money to go over there and do it. So,
wow.
I mean, yeah, that's a really wonderful mindset, because it's that thing, isn't it? It's that the truth. It's a very privileged position to be able to get in a plane, fly to, you know, Death Valley with, you know, four of your mates and do this and have a good time. What was the longest run that you did in the red heat box?
In the heat box, probably a length of a movie, which was just slightly over 2 hours.
Wow.
And what was your what was your power bill like?
So I was lucky enough, I had it set up at work. So oh, nice. I haven't been given the bill yet.
You didn't have the cops raiding you?
No, but
oh, good
still
stuff.
Got it. So to be honest, I've just started using it again. So it still goes. So it's pretty cool.
What do you got planned?
Nothing yet. I've got a mate that's temporary using it at the moment.
Right.
He's got an event coming up and he just wants to see if he can handle the jandle. So yeah, we blew the dust off the treadmill and got it going again, and it's working great.
Nice. And I'm wondering, so this year was cancelled, wasn't it?
Yeah.
There was a whole lot of factors, though. It was just COVID. There was like
It was a landslide or something, an earthquake?
Landslides and earthquakes.
It was a plague of locusts, I think, as well. It was everything,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah, I think they had an earthquake over there.
Oh,
but that actually turned out all right. But I think the race only got cancelled maybe 3 weeks beforehand. The race director was pretty determined to have it, but I think it was just that much pressure with being in the national park. And
yeah.
Obviously, this COVID thing's just got out of control at the time that, yeah, you had to cancel. So, yeah.
Hey, Glenn, we're sort of curious. How did you get your start in running?
Very difficult, to be honest. I played rugby up till I was about 30. And we had a young family of a couple of kids then. And it was very difficult to get to training on Tuesday and Thursday and play rugby on Saturday and wake up with a sore head on Sunday. So, one of the boys from work actually said to me, why don't we take you on a run on a Wednesday? And it just led from there, 10Ks, and did my first half marathon and did that in my rugby shorts and my pulled up socks and my black t-shirt or black singlet top, and I've just progressed on from that, and longer the better runs for me now. It led to a marathon, then an ultra, and I've slowly slipped into lycra and
got out of the rugby shorts,
got rid of the rugby shorts, and I don't know, for me the attraction seems to be distance these days, perhaps not speed, and just trying to push the boundaries to see how far you can go, mentally as well. So it's ticking the boxes for me at the moment.
So that's quite the contrast, isn't it? You said playing rugby on the Saturday and waking up with a sore head on the Sunday versus now you start running on the Saturday and then on the Sunday you're still running.
Yeah, that's right. My wife always said to me, she goes, at least running is going to be a cheap sport. All you have to do is buy a pair of shoes
every 10 days.
Yeah, but time if you do a run overseas and these race events can be expensive sometimes. Mm. It sort of adds up, but. I think, I don't mind paying for that because I get enjoyment out of it and meet some good buggers along the way. So, it's really cool.
All part of the adventure.
It is, yeah, it really is, yep.
And so have you always been down south?
Yeah, born and bred in Dunedin, so, very much a local.
Yeah. And so when was your first Northburn? How did you get hooked on that?
First Northburn was basically my second ultra. I did the Kepler, which is 60Ks, and then I thought, it'll do Northburn. So the Kepler was in the December, and Northburn was in March, late March, and didn't really know what I was getting myself into. So Northburn is probably regarded as New Zealand's toughest 100-miler. And the first two and a half, you do three loops, first two and a half loops was fine, and then everything just felt a bit. So I just, I wasn't drinking properly or eating properly. I had blisters all on my feet. I come in at the finish and I was on the medic's bed and dizzy, and it was not a pretty sight. So it was a bit of a rude awakening to 100-miler events, but since then I've learned a few tricks, and in a way they've become easier. I know what to expect.
Well, and you, when you say learn a few tricks, I mean you've had a couple of wins there.
Yeah, a couple of wins. I've done Northburn every time they've had it, so I've managed to get myself 8 buckles over the years. So I haven't missed one yet. So wow. I'd like to keep that going.
And legend has it you once completed it with a broken pelvis. Is that right?
Yeah, I got a it was a year of bad water, actually. I had a stress fracture in the pelvis, and so that previous year I had the stress fracture. I've still got it now, but at the time I was contemplating on entering bad water, and so I put my name forward, and basically I got in, but I hadn't run for 6 months of the end of that year. And after I found out that I got into bad water, that was in February, I had Northburn in March. So a week out from Northburn, I went for my first run for 6 months. And so a week after that, I did Northburn. So that was a pretty slow time. But I did a lot of walking, and that, I probably ran the first loop, but the next two loops I walked. And so it was a long day out there. I got my money's worth. but I also found out that my pelvis seemed to be all right. It was a bit sore, but knowing that I had gone around Northburn a couple of laps, I thought, yeah, we'll give this bad water a crack. So, I went into bad water still with the injury, but with the heat over there, it seemed to help. So, it didn't sort of flare up too much. So I was pretty lucky. But I think a stress fracture on the pelvis takes a long time to heal, because I've still got it at the moment. So, yeah, I've just got to be sensible-ish.
Hence the hot water bottle in your lap.
That just worked a dream.
Yeah,
that's good.
So in that 6 months where you didn't run until a week before Northburn, were you doing anything else? Or
yeah, I was doing. So I needed to hold my fitness, which I had. So I was doing aqua jogging and biking up hills off my seat of my bike, and doing hot yoga, which also seemed to help things as well. So it sort of held my fitness quite a bit, but, you know, there's nothing like running to really sort yourself out. But, so after I'd done Northburn, I was back into the running and just sort of had a fairly steady increase in mileage leading up until July, until when bad water was. So,
What do you do in a typical build-up week like that? Building up to an event like that, and I know it depends on what stage you're at, but in that sort of base building phase, what's your sort of weekly mileage?
So basically, I wasn't running every day. I don't run every day even now. So I was just trying to mix it up with hot yoga, bit of biking, bit of running, and in the heat box was a good good break from it as well, because you're on the treadmill, you're on soft ground, you're in a heated room. You know, it was perfect. So, to be honest, I was probably only doing 100 k's a week, and that was sufficient for me. Mm. I don't really believe in high mileage. I think you just wear yourself out, and you're not giving your body a chance to you know, play catch up and repair itself. So, yeah, about 100 k's a week's, you know, tops for me.
Yeah. Yeah,
seems to work out all right.
So that would, I mean, it sort of indicates that, you know, the top 2 inches are probably just as important as
what's underneath,
the 6 foot underneath, right?
Yeah,
because if you can go, you know, like I'm a terrible nurse. I'll say that, like I'm a shocker, but you know, even I know that if you came to me and said, "Ma'am, I've got a broken pelvis. I'm going to do a big spec out, I'm going to do bad water or Northburn," my first advice would be like, please don't. But, you know, it's conventional medical wisdom. But what was it? I mean, have you always had that kind of belief?
I've always had that, that, I don't know, style of, if you sign up for something or if you're going to do something, you push on and you carry it through. I'm not a giver upper. If you set a goal, I'm going to finish that goal sort of thing, I try and be strong and positive. So I've only ever had one DNF, and that was, you may have heard it, a Crush the Cargill event.
Yeah.
So I only did one lap, and then I had a DNF. So I'm not too sure if you can really count that, but however, it's it has drawn to my attention.
Yeah, I bet it is.
So you do Badwater, but you can't even crush the Cargill.
But where does that come from? Where does that mental toughness come from? I mean, I can imagine you were a pretty formidable rugby teammate, but to be so tough mentally, where does it come from?
I think it's something that you learn as you get older, and as you get older, you probably get a bit more stubborn, typical runs, big running events, you'd probably find the older person will do, better than the younger person.
Uh-huh.
They got more stickability. They've had a bit more life skills over the years and just a bit more hardened warrior sort of thing. So,
how old are you now, Glenn? Do you mind me asking?
47.
Oh, that's a great age.
Yeah, it's like
that's a great age.
It's like a fine wine.
Is that your age?
Yeah. 73.
Although I have
1973.
And I, as the younger person in the group.
Oh, whatever.
Coming in there,
only just
43. But you're right. You're dead right. I noticed that even myself, things that would have just knocked me 6-10 years ago, or just I don't know what. I guess it's a lifestyle thing, or just a life stage thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And, like I said, when you enter a run, a marathon or a, half marathon or whatever, an ultra, it's such a, at the time it seems a long time when you're out there running, but, a decent run is going to be less than 24 hours. It's such a short time. Mm. So just get out there and give it heaps. Of course it's going to hurt. It hurts everyone to do a race regardless of the distance, but just suck it up, and before you know it, it's going to be over, and cross that finish line, and it's going to be like, wow, I've done this is pretty cool. You deserve a drink or shout yourself out for dinner or whatever, but take those wee things.
Is that something that you is that, and I hope I'm not being too intrusive here, if you say doing Badwater or Northburn or Biggs, I mean, do you find that, do you have a mantra, or are you just saying that sort of in your head all the time, like, I've paid the money, I'll take my chances, I've signed up for this, let's get it done?
I think it's what you put into it. Right. So with any type of event that perhaps I do, you sort of size it up, if it'd been a Northburn or a Great Naseby Water race. So, 5-6 months before, you lock yourself into doing that event, you pay your entry fee. Mm. So I'm one that, once you've done that, you've committed, right, you've got a target, you've got a challenge, let's work towards that. So, and when you line up for the start line, you shouldn't have anything to worry about. You just go out there and knock it out. You've done all the hard work to get there. Just enjoy the day or enjoy the days that you're out there doing it.
And I guess that's the thing, isn't it? It's one of the things that's common throughout all the people that we talk to is that sort of when they talk about when you start something, it's always best to finish it. And also that thing, it's the process of everything. So it's once you're on the line, it's almost the icing on the cake, isn't it? It's the cherry, like running, say, Kepler or, I don't know, Great Naseby, it's the cherry on top.
It is. And, you've got those type of events, you've got all good buggers around you.
Yeah.
You make new friends as well. Ask me 15 years ago if I was going to be a runner and do marathons and ultras, and I would have said no way.
Yeah.
But it's amazing how things change.
It's interesting.
In a short time.
Can I ask what position were you? I'm picking either a centre or a flanker.
I'm going flanker.
Yeah, number eight.
Oh, number eight. There you go. There you go.
Yeah.
Number eight off the back. Yeah,
straight up the middle.
So I was a solid lad back in the day. I never quite hit three figures, but I was 99.9 kilos at least. So yeah, I've lost all that rugby weight, which is probably a lot of booze as well back in those days, because it was quite social. I used to play hard and party hard, so yeah, but I've had to have a change of wardrobe over the years, so but that's cool.
That's a good thing, yeah.
Hey, this year is hardly been, I mean, you know, all these races have been cancelled and stuff, but you've hardly had a quiet one. You had Alps to Ocean for the win. You ran a marathon around your own house during lockdown. You ran to Naseby when that was cancelled, and now Biggs. I mean, you don't like sitting down much, do you?
Yeah, I'm not very good sitting down on the couch watching TV. I'd rather be active, doing something. So, if it's not a race or an event that I'm doing, I'd like to dream up the events on my own that involve other people. I tend to get a bit of a buzz out of that. So if I can involve other people and to get involved with me and come for a bit of a run or crew for me, or, you know, just get people involved is probably more satisfaction of actually running the race, to be honest.
Mm.
Yeah.
What do your kids make of Dad just, see you later, kids? I'm going, you're not in that sort of event, but the fact that you do such big distances and you do all these things, what do they make of it? Do they get out and run too?
Initially I had so I'm a father of three girls. They're 18, 15 and 13 now.
Wow.
So initially in the younger days I had them up at the athletics club, when they were 10 and 12 sort of thing, but one by one, they've dropped off and picked up other sports and what have you. But they're all pretty active, active kids. But it's the type of running that I do. Where I go out for an 8 hour run or something like that. It's not easy sometimes being a family man to find that time to do it. And It is a juggling act at times, so I don't have a strict routine of running Tuesday, Thursday at a certain time. If an opportunity arises where Dad's got some free time, I'll go and do it. But family comes first, and we've got work in there as well. So it's not all roses, that's for sure.
Mm. Oh, look, I mean, it's that thing. I think anyone with a family, and you've almost, I guess with older children too, the challenges, whilst on one hand, yes, if you left them by themselves for more than 2 hours, they'd more than likely still be alive where you left them, they can take care of themselves in some respects. But the quality of the challenges changes so markedly as your kids get older, hey?
Yeah, very much so. And saying that, as challenges when they were young to go running was hard. But as they get older, like the oldest one's got a driver's license now, so I can sort of say, hey, look, I'm going to run from Dunedin to Oamaru. Can you come and pick me up, sort of thing? So so that's nice in that respect. To get the kids involved.
Yeah.
So when I did the run to Naseby from Dunedin, my two eldest girls came up that night and stayed in the camping ground, and they saw me running along and that. So that's pretty cool, doing something with Dad. And, I get a big buzz out of it as well. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, it's cool.
Being part of the adventure.
Just being involved is cool. Even though they're not runners, at least they still want to hang out with Dad.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's awesome. And the Naseby run, you pulled the pin because the weather got sort of snowing, a bit inclement. Yeah.
Yes, a beautiful day going up to Naseby, but it just happened to be when they had a couple of snowfalls a couple of days earlier, and the snow was still hanging around once I got to Naseby, and it just got so bloody cold. And then I went to leave Naseby and run back home again. And I got down the road, 30 k's down the road, and it was, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning. I was by myself. It was really cold. I was lonely. There was no one there to hold my hand. I was probably crying like a baby. So I rang my two girls up that were staying in the Naseby camping ground and asked them for a ride.
Yeah.
So they came down and got me, and we drove home. But I had fun getting there and a wee way home. It was about 175 k's, but I was hoping to make the return trip, which was going to be equivalent to the 200-miler race that was going to be on that weekend. But of course it wasn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was almost the anti-Badwater. Snowing and dark. Yeah. And
totally opposite. And I wasn't prepared for the cold. I knew there was a bit of snow up there and it might get cold, but I was just unprepared for how cold it was. It was just, was just not nice.
So this is a man who's lived in Dunedin his whole life saying I wasn't prepared for the cold.
Well, I was just thinking you got to do some adjustments to that heat box maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, put a freezer in there.
Hey, Glenn, the other thing you did this year was that marathon around your house, 610 laps.
Yeah.
Holy moly, how'd you manage that? Did you wear a hole in the ground?
Yeah, it was a good idea the night before that I had a plan to run around my house, to do a marathon around my house. It actually took a bit out of me. I thought it'd take about 3.5 hours, but I think it took closer to 5. Yeah, so it was 617 times around the house.
Wow.
And the lawn is about a third of the house down the side of it. So in the end, I was creating like a mud track down there. It was a lot harder than I thought, actually, to be honest.
Well, it's a lot of corners, isn't it? You know, you wouldn't ever find much of a rhythm.
No, you just get a bit of speed up and then you're turning and, it's just bloody hard work.
did you see on the news over the weekend those three elite mountain bikers? They'd just been to the World Champs and they were in their quarantine hotel here and they ordered a half marathon in their room.
Oh, really?
Just in a hotel, back and forth.
Wow.
Just, I think it was Anton Cooper and a couple of other guys.
Oh, wow.
Just
busted out.
Good to know that there are other crazy people out there.
we've all done that this year.
Imagine
this
being the neighbour of that hotel room. Bum, 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 bang, bum, 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 bang. Just for hours.
Yeah, a wee bit annoying.
Hey, Glenn, look, we've taken up so much of your time. I really, really appreciate it and some great yarns. But we do have one last question that we ask everyone who comes on Dirt Church Radio. And that is Glenn Sutton. What is your greatest run ever? So it's just a run, might not be a race, just a run that really sticks in your mind is like, that's my favourite run.
About 3 years ago, I had a crazy idea of running from Haast Beach, which is in the South Island, on the west coast, to St Clair Beach, which is in Dunedin on the east coast. And I managed to persuade four of my mates to come along with me to run, and we had a van and we did it. We pulled it off. So that was how many k's was that? That was 427 k's. If anyone wants to try that,
it's
all on the state highway. It took 67 hours. But man, we had a ball. It was a great time. I had all sorts of people running with me and coming in, random people coming in for a bit of a jog and helping out. That was just such a cool thing to do. It was just
spectacular.
Just because I thought it was a good idea and it was.
What time of year was that?
So that was beginning of May, shortly after Northburn, so about 6 weeks after Northburn, just before winter, so it's a great time of year to do it.
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah, we had many a good story out of that jog.
A few beautiful sunrises and sunsets in that one.
Yeah, yeah, it was. Everything just went according to plan. The weather was great. Roads were great. Great bunch of mates, and the body held up. So, yeah, it was fantastic.
Awesome.
Brilliant. Hey, thank you so much. I really, really appreciate talking to you. It's been amazing. You're a legend.
Absolute legend.
Yeah, cool. Hey, cheers for the phone call, guys.
No worries.
Loved it.
Yeah.
Epic.
I mean, running in like 30 plus degree temperatures overseas is hard enough, and then he's saying 41 in that little box, which, I mean, you know, that would have been horrible, but 51 degrees.
51 degrees.
And he's saying that's a cool, that is cool because the world record is 56 degrees, 1913. I mean, still 56 degrees. That's bananas.
Mm.
It's like a hot wash in a washing machine.
It is.
Yeah.
It's like half a cup of tea.
It is. What a conversation. Look, Glenn, thank you so much. And we hope that you found that conversation enlivening and inspiring. And thank you very much for tuning in. We're on social media at Dirt Church Radio. You can email us at dirtchurchradio@gmail.com. And you can find us on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, and other podcast platforms. And you can download direct from the website, which is dirtchurchradio.com. Also, if you're not where we want us, let us know. Don't forget to subscribe and rate us. If you like what you see, please spread the love. It would be great as many people heard the show as possible. And for that, we need your help.
Don't forget to write in with your greatest friend ever. You know, I was actually looking back through some of them today for some reason. And there's some bangers in there, aren't there?
So, like, really tear jerkers, uplifting, funny,
laugh out loud moments.
Yeah, what a pickle.
Yeah. So, just, I mean, people, send us your greatest run ever, please. We'd love to hear from you.
I'm actually still laughing about last week's one.
Yeah.
When did you get traumatized?
The Falcon. The Falcon.
It was amazing.
Yeah. Thanks to our supporters, Scott Running, Further Faster, Spring Energy, and Sierra. And thank you to our Patreon supporters and Wild Things.
Yep. Thanks to our editor, Kieran, and we've got a great guest lined up for you next week, so tune in then. Ka kite.
Ka kite.
Thanks, Rigby.